Call now on 1300 222 774 or text 19 774 774. Hilary Harper
on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
Well, it's 8:30. Welcome to the morning program. We'll be with you until 11 this morning when we hand over to Grandstand. Coming up after 9, Michael Gross must get mobbed by parents whenever he leaves the house. He says he has the secret of good behaviour in children. When I mentioned that around the office, I was mobbed, so clearly it's a popular topic. We'll take your calls too, and you can ask a question of Michael Gross on 1300 222 774 after the 9 o'clock news. Bit of an announcement though. About the traffic, sadly, it's not very exciting. The Westgate Freeway is having some closures overnight tonight until 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. All the eastbound Burnley Tunnel lanes will be fully closed between Cook Street and Power Street. This will affect traffic from the Balti Bridge heading towards the Burnley Tunnel, and there'll be detours in place. Also, until, that one's gone, 8 o'clock today. It's well past 8 o'clock this morning. On the Swan Street Bridge, though, there are two eastbound lanes will be closed from until 5 o'clock on Monday morning. So all weekend on the Swan Street Bridge, two eastbound lanes are closed. The traffic will be relocated onto the westbound lanes of the bridge. So understandably, there will be delays there. You'll need to seek an alternative route if you can. You're listening to Hilary Harper. We are speaking at the moment with Phil Anderson. He's the Managing Director and Founder of Economic Indicator Services, and a service operating out of London and Melbourne. And he's written a book called The Secret Life of Real Estate, How It Moves and Why. There'll be some interesting discussion, I think, emerging from this. We've seen a few news articles over the last week or so about movements in the property market. Is it rebounding? There's reports of some movement up in the higher end of the market and now also in the lower end. We'll find out what it all means. And we'll take your calls on 1300 222 774. But welcome, Phil Anderson.
Hi, Hilary.
Thanks for coming in and joining
pleasure.
Us in your jet-setting London-Melbourne lifestyle.
Yes.
So what is the key to this book that you've written, The Secret Life of Real Estate? What is the secret?
Well, for my own personal investments and things I've been trying to do, I've always had an interest in forecasting. And I've always asked the question, it seems to me, for investment and things, timing, it's all about timing. And the question is, I think, for investors, can you really know what's coming next?
That's the big question, isn't
it?
Yeah,
because that's the harder part of investing, of course, to try and know that. And so what I went ahead and tried to study was the past to see if it could tell you a little bit about the future. And I found some interesting things when you study the US real estate. So yeah.
What were your key findings when you looked at how real estate goes up and down over
the years? Well, it started, I was quite lucky back in about 1991. I read an obscure book written by Fred Harrison called The Power in the Land, and he wrote that in 1983, and the book forecast the 1989 property boom and then the slump. When I read that, I thought to myself, maybe if there's another cycle, I could take advantage of that and retire early and move overseas or do something else. And I decided I'd go ahead and research the US economy, and I did that. I felt like when I did the research, it's sort of, when you look back, it's sort of back into the dinosaur age, you know, it was pre-Google and pre-internet. But when you had a look at the US economy, it was quite clear that the US real estate market had very clear 18-year cycles.
That's quite a precise figure.
Yes, it is. It's not 18 exactly, but it's sort of 18 to 20 really, but it sort of averages out at 18. And when you go back, I went right back with the book. I studied right back to 1800 when the US federal government started selling off its land to and inviting settlers to come over into America.
So before that, it was this land belongs Virgin. To the government and you might be able to use it for X, Y, or Z purpose.
The Indians would have said it belonged to them, really. But besides that, once new settlers came into America, it was just a free-for-all for the land. And the more the settlers in the US, the more inland they went, the better the land got. And if you study the history, you can see there was a big fight for it. But from that history, you can see that the U.S. real estate market, it had booms in 1818, 1836, 1857, 1873, 1893, 1908, and so on. And after big real estate bubbles, you then had awesome busts.
And that was inevitable? Every boom was followed by a bust?
It was, yes. That's how what history showed. And I came to study this throughout 1996, 1997 or thereabouts when I was doing the research. And it seemed to me that if you can, I just thought you could take advantage of that because it seemed to me that there was, by about 2000, it was clear there was another bubble building, and you've now seen the results.
So how comparable is the US research and the US situation to the Australian situation?
Why I did the US market is because the recession I saw in 1991 or so, it was clear that the US led the world into recession, and then it led the world out. So I felt they're clearly the biggest market. They have, I think, what is it, about 15-20%, maybe more of the world's GDP. So what happens there is going to affect the rest of the world.
And obviously the subprime issue started there.
Yes, that's right. So Australia possibly being the 51st state of the US anyway, so it was going to affect us as well. And if they were going to lead us into then that was something I think you could take advantage of around the world and in Australia.
So just looking through selected chapters of the book, you're predicting a bust fairly soon.
Well, I worked out that not only within that 18-year period, there are various things that repeat in each cycle, and I put together a real estate investment clock to help guide me through that cycle. And it does appear that America is leading us, and I think that there are probably from Australia's point of view at the moment, we're in an interesting stage, and things look a little bit overvalued here, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I was just looking at the paper this morning, and there's several articles saying, look, house prices in the last quarter in the lower-end suburbs have hit record highs. In the higher end of the market, it's going up.
Yes.
Construction, there's a recovery in new home building approvals and things like that.
It's an interesting question because, you know, from my point of view, you'll have, you know, and I brought a couple of articles in here just to remind me really where you've had one forecaster from the IMF who's suggesting that Australia will, because of our export figures, will bear the brunt of a recession, and then you have other forecasters coming out and saying no, Australia won't have a recession and we'll get through. How is it you can actually have some sort of idea about what's going to happen next? That's the problem. So in the book, I tried to construct, or I have constructed, a rough guide to how that cycle would turn, and roughly so you can know where you are. Now, it just so happens at the moment that Australia, within this 6 months at the moment, where it's at probably the most difficult stage of the real estate cycle. So it is a little bit harder to try and work out. But Australia, historically, has been a little bit behind the US in its cycle. And the next couple of months are going to be very interesting to see what happens. Having said that, you don't have to be so smart as yourself to have an opinion on that sometimes, because what I do also try and do in the book is to show real estate investors how, if they understand what happens in the stock market, that can give them a bit of an idea about what might unfold next. And the reason I suggest we're at such an interesting stage of the real estate market is because of what's happening in the stock market. Now, the stock market's made a clear recovery from the past year or so downwards. There will be, coming up in the next 6 months or so, there'll be another inevitable low in the stock market. And the key for...
And sorry, how do you know that?
The stock market goes up and down.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm not suggesting that I know when it's the exact day of the next low, but there will inevitably be another low point sometime next year. And that particular low point, when you have a look at when that low forms, if the next low in the US and in Australia, if it's lower than the low we went through in March of this year, that's the weight of money in the stock market suggesting that there are worse things to come for the US. But next year, if the low in the United States in the stock market is higher than the low we had this year, then that's pretty much the weight of money suggesting that things will have improved, and pretty much the recession will be over. So you don't actually have to know, really. The stock market will tell us, but that's what I try and go through in the book. It allows people who read the book, if they can match the stock market to real estate, it would allow them to have a very good idea about what's coming next. You just need a little bit of elbow grease to do the study on it.
Well, and we'll talk a bit about the mechanic of that in a minute. But if you've got any questions for Phil about this theory, the 18-year cycle theory, and how it might apply to your investments in Australia, you can give us a call, 1300 222 774. What do you think about that, and how might you profit from it? 1300 222 774. You can also be texting us on 19 774 774. So when you're watching the stock market, what are you looking for to pick when the next real estate boom or bust is going to happen?
Well, it's more the longer term picture, and the stock market over the next couple of years will progressively, once things recover, it will progressively make higher lows from this year's low. And when that starts to happen, the thing about the stock market is the stock market prices in the real estate bust much quicker than the price of real estate. So, and as you can see that through the real estate investment trusts, because their prices come down very quickly. And so once the stock market stabilizes, which it's doing at the moment, then it will tell you that the real estate market is in the process of bottoming around the world. So that's why you can compare the two.
Do you need to keep an eye on interest rates? What's happening with them specifically?
Yes, interest rates again, of course, will affect the property market, whether interest rates go up or down. So that's also the $64 million question.
I'm wondering, because for a novice like me, it seems like the financial system, the markets, the property market, they're all full of a lot of variables, and some of those are to do with human emotion and human nature.
Yes.
Is it possible to accurately predict these kinds of things when you've got those variables?
Well, don't get me wrong here. I've got absolutely no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. But you can get an overall picture of what's going to happen next if you can study history. The other thing I can say about that is, and this is where I get off on a tangent with what other economists might suggest, the economy does have a scientific structure. The economy is built on the economic rent, and the economic rent is to economics what gravity is to science. If investors can come to understand what the economic rent is all about, and that was first formulated by the economist David Ricardo in about 1810, it's his law of economic rent. If you can come to some sort of knowledge of that, you can see why the cycles happen and why they must inevitably repeat. Again, that's what I've gone through in the book. Once you get it, it becomes self-evident, and once you can understand that point, you see right through the stupidity of economists and how the economists will never see a downturn coming because they do not admit the existence of the economic rent.
What is the economic rent?
The economic rent. I can give you an example there. A house costs the same to build whether you build it in Seymour or whether you build it in the inner city suburbs of Melbourne. The difference between what it costs to buy the house in Seymour or to buy the house in the inner city is, of course, the land value. That land value is the expression of the benefit of the location. To put it another way, I can give you an example with perhaps a magazine called The Big Issue. In San Francisco, when that first started, the sellers of The Big Issue, they noticed that you could, for the same application of their 8 hours of labour, a seller of The Big Issue who stood on the main platform of the station, he sold more than a seller who stood at the base of one of the hills of San Francisco outside the city. I can tell you that fights developed for the best location to sell The Big Issue.
So this is like the land system in microcosm?
Yes. The fights developed for that best location. And for the best location, you get the best. You could get the best sales. That difference, it's not something that is brought about by the worker. It's just the existence of the location. It's that something for nothing. That's the economic rent, and that's what investors. That's how you make your money if you find the best locations. That's what I describe in the book. If you can get to understand that system intuitively, it will improve your investment ability, and I can guarantee you it will allow you to make far better forecasts of where the economy is going.
Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic. 1300 222 774 is our number. If you've got a question for Phil Anderson, who's the author of a book called The Secret Life of Real Estate and the Managing Director and Founder of Economic Indicator Services, you can give us a call, 1300 222 774, or you can text us, as Vilia has done, on 19 774 774. She says, Melbourne has experienced a long building boom. Why is there still a housing shortage? Fair question.
Yes. Well, the prices also depend on supply and demand. And I'm not a specialist of individual locations. I just have studied the cycles, and I know that there is a cycle. If we don't build enough houses, or if we're getting more immigrants and more people coming into the city, there'll be a shortage. But one suspects sometimes the shortage may not be real. There could sometimes be artificial shortages. I know when I walk around town, there's a lot of empty buildings around town, but there's no pressure on those owners to actually put them into productive use. So the shortage can be artificial sometimes.
What about the first homeowners grant? How is that? I mean, that's something that we have here in Australia, and I don't think they have in the States. How does that change the landscape, if at all?
The first home buyers grant is an interesting phenomenon. Because Australia is behind the US, we sometimes get the chance to improve the ability to ameliorate the effects now of these downturns, because they happen first in America, because when we're going to be affected by America. So a government can dream up schemes where it can support the market, and it can do that by bringing buying forward when buyers can take advantage of a homeowner of a grant like that. But of course, what the government and perhaps the banks, they don't tell you, they're quite aware that those grants are designed to support the system. And it's a bit of a dangerous scenario sometimes, because those grants, they capitalise immediately into the price of a house, or more particularly the price of land. So it is we are getting some of our youth and our first home buyers, we are actually asking them to pay more for their house to support the system so that the land price doesn't collapse. In my view, I'd fail to understand why it might not have been in the interests of buyers to actually have lower prices for houses.
How do you do that, though? How do you make the prices go down?
Well, they went down in the rest of the world. Why not allow that to happen here by just having the prices come down by not having a first homeowner's grant? The first homeowner's grant, as soon as it was announced, it capitalises immediately into higher house prices. That's the law of rent. It's fundamental.
So, but if you've got a situation where people are already finding it hard to afford housing, what do you do?
Well, I'd have let prices come down. I'd have let prices come down. Have lower prices. They're lower in the rest of the world now. Why not the same here?
So it was a political decision, you're saying, rather than an economically wise one?
It wasn't just a political decision. We had the situation here where banks had been creating a lot of credit based on the value of the houses and the land. And it wasn't in the bank's interest to see the prices of that go lower than the value of the loan outstanding. So I'd imagine in the corridors of power, there would have been a lot of bankers suggesting to the government that we need to prop up prices here, you know. And so the people will be stuffed, and the bankers will win out again.
Some interesting ideas. We'll take some calls on 1300 222 774. David has called in. Good morning, David.
Good morning. It's David Higgins here. I'm the associate professor at RMIT.
Hi, David.
Good morning, Phil. Totally agree with where you're coming from. In my lectures, I talk about location, 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 which is a TV series in Australia. But when I say location, 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 I say location geographically, as the space market is focused on specific locations. Location in asset class, as they're driven by different determinants. And location in time, that's the critical one. As property market, the space market is slow to change, it's quick to change, and property market is the supply is long term. So that's where I sort of come from. Also, relating to property forecasting, generally the accuracy of forecasts about 18 months. Thereafter, you're better off doing a straight line forecast.
Yeah, it's interesting good luck in your teaching like that. I don't get too many economists in the faculty there coming forward and thinking about location like that. So it's promising to hear. It's good to see the faculty like that thinking about location. Economists have a bit of a they don't They should understand the real estate market far more than they do. And so, yeah, that's good. I concur with what you're suggesting.
That's good. Thank you.
Thanks, David.
Goodbye.
And we'll go to more of your calls in just a moment on 1300 222 774. It's 10 to 9.
Join Alan Brough each Sunday morning from 10. Where else will you hear the high arts discussed in such detail as this?
It sounds very intense to be doing 8 hours a day in the rehearsal room. Are there times where you just go, oh, come on, this is too much, can we put a fart joke in here?
Yeah. The more difficult and dark the material is, the more
the
stupid.
The more the word poo is used.
Yeah. That's right.
Alan Brough on 774 ABC Melbourne.
The disembodied voice is right again. She's so inscrutable.
Hilary Harper on 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
It's 10 to 9 and we're speaking with Phil Anderson, who's written a book called The Secret Life of Real Estate that suggests that the property market has roughly 18-year cycles. And we'd love to hear your thoughts on 1300 222 774. Oliver has called in from Black Rock. Good morning, Oliver.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Oliver.
Well, thanks.
I guess my question's twofold. I'm a 28 year old, and I've scrapped together a deposit with the help of my family, and I'm deciding when the right time is to, I guess, enter the market and get my first property. And the second question is, I'm conflicted as to whether or not I get something more in a city, and all I'm going to be able to afford is a little dog box somewhere. Or alternatively, if I go sort of further down towards the peninsula and get a home. So I'm wondering what would be the best value sort of in the long term, get the land or get the dog box in the city?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't study markets in geographic locations specifically, but my first instinct at the moment is my money is not buying just presently. I think you could afford to wait just a little bit and see how things develop from just this particular point of view. I would suggest that when the home buyer's grant and things, when that comes off, prices would have to drop somewhat, so you don't need to panic. And I also suggest that with the buyer's rush that's been happening at the moment, I think you have to do the opposite to the crowd to be successful long term. So that's what I'm suggesting. I'm not an expert in specific locations, but sure. Patience at the moment, I think, is a bit of a virtue just for the next couple of months and see how the stock market unfolds and to see how the prices, see what they do. You don't have to be in a rush at the moment.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Oliver. Thanks. So, Phil, if you shouldn't be doing what the crowd is doing, does that not make writing a book about it a bit of a dodgy prospect if more people are going to be reading about it?
I was giving some lectures a couple of years back, 2006, 2007 or so, and when I was doing that, my brief at the time, I was suggesting that prices had peaked, and it was a bit of a time where, certainly from an investment point of view, not for your own house, but from an investment point of view, it was time to be a little bit careful and not go into too much leverage, because generally history shows that those who have the highest leverage at the peak of the market, they generally don't survive the downturn. And you've seen that with some of the more high flyers in the stock market.
So keep your debt down is a
yeah,
message?
Yeah, in the last years of the cycle, it doesn't pay to be too over-leveraged. And this was a message at the time that wasn't popular with a lot of people in the industry and things, because I was suggesting that perhaps people should pull back a little bit, but you know that's not a popular thing to be saying sometimes.
I suppose
in the market,
real estate agents want to make a living all the time instead of just in 18-year cycles.
Well, buying and selling, it goes on all the time, but it's in the industry's interest sometimes to get more and more people in. But I think sometimes it's time to be cautious.
So just another question too, is this 18-year cycle idea something that people have just failed to realise until now, or has the industry kind of been going, oh, let's not disseminate that too widely?
Oh, no, that's interesting. I've made no claim in the book to say that it's original, that it was my discovery. The book's unique in the fact that I think I'm the only person in the world that's actually put this together the way I have. But Homer Hoyt wrote a book called 100 Years of Land Values in Chicago, and he showed the existence of average 18-year cycles in Chicago up until 1930s. There was another chap in the United States called Roy Wenslick that put together a fabulous forecasting unit from the 1930s right through the 1970s. His work, which I managed to see in the St. Louis Library, was unbelievably prescient in what he had to say. It was so prescient, it was absolutely astonishing to sit there in a library and actually read what he had to say. Again, he based his stuff on this regular cyclical occurrence. He didn't say it was exactly 18 years, but his forecasts were clearly leaning that way. And even in the 19, you know, he wrote a book in 1936 that forecast the subsequent peaks of 1944 and then a low in 1955. And then he said things would be booming into the early 1970s. He was exactly right because he knew the structure of the economy and the way it worked. So I'm not the first one that's seen it. And, of course, then there's Fred Harrison himself in London, who I do a bit of work with now in London. His books, the 2005 book he wrote was astonishingly prescient. So, yeah, I don't make any claim to be it's mine in itself, but the way I put it together is quite unique.
We'll go to Max in Pakenham. Good morning, Max.
Morning.
Hi, Max.
My question for Phil is: I'm reading a book at the moment by Harry Dent out of the States. He's a forecaster and economist.
Yeah, it's interesting
about the demographic cycles.
Yes,
and he was apparently was able to forecast the boom of the early 2000s till just recently.
Yes.
And this book was written 12 months ago, and he's forecasting a rally in the second half of 2009.
Yes.
That will peak in the first half of 2010, and then we're in for quite a downward period in the economy. Is this whole thing of going back to first principles, is that sort of the basis of the 18-year property cycle? And he talks about the baby boomers and the reaching the peak of their spending and not having a larger generation coming through to replace them.
Max, what I would urge you to do is to overlay my real estate cyclical thesis and the 18-year stuff. Overlay that on what you've read with Harry Dent. I'd also suggest, going back to a point I made earlier, you don't actually have to be smart about this. If you can get the ability to read the way stock markets move in their ups and downs and higher lows and lower lows and things, the stock market will tell us whether that's going to happen or not. And you'll know in the next six months or so, you'll know by whether the stock market makes its higher lows next year or whether they're lower lows. If the US stock market next year makes lower lows, lower prices than what they've made this year, then I can assure you that the US is going to have a very difficult 2010. If the US stock market and our stock markets, if they do not go lower next year, then the recession is over and we will be moving into the next 18-year cycle. And I can guarantee you, because the world governments are doing absolutely everything possible to protect the system. Once they protect the system and once the banks get profitable again, the 18-year real estate cycle, it's 100% certain that it will repeat. So my suggestion is that with all the stuff that you read, overlay this 18-year thesis and then study the stock market a little bit and its lower lows and higher lows, and you will know because the stock market will tell you.
We'll go to one, possibly two more callers. Ken in Northern Victoria. Good morning, Ken.
Yes, good morning. Phil, the Victorian government have recently announced quite a substantial release of land, rezoning land in the outer metropolitan Melbourne areas. And they've also announced with that a massive, what appears to be a massive tax on land that is rezoned. Is this the way to go? Is it fair? And what are the impacts on these people and then in turn the buyers who wish to purchase and build houses in these new zones?
Oh, interesting question. I might be a little bit controversial here, I'm not sure, but...
Warning.
when I come back from overseas, I spend a good deal of time in both France and London, and each time I come back, it strikes me that Melbourne's infrastructure, I think, generally its rail system and others, I think it's poor, actually. I think it's really poor. And we have to find ways to be able to fund that infrastructure. And I think that one of the just ways to do that is to say that those people who get windfall gains with the rezonings, I think it's reasonable to ask them to put in a little bit of that gain to fund some of the infrastructure. So I'm not against that, really. And I might note as well, when the government announces all those new land sales and things, if you study Melbourne's history, you'll find that certainly 1970s, the 1990s was the same. To get over some of the downturn, the government did exactly the same thing and announced these new land sales and announced these new building projects on the outskirts of the city. So it's just history repeating there.
It's as always, it sounds like. Mm. Thank you, Ken. Thank you to everyone who called in. We had a late rush of calls, but unfortunately we've run out of time with Phil Anderson. Phil, thank you for coming in and stirring the waters today.
Yeah, good. No, my pleasure.
Phil Anderson, Managing Director of Economic Indicator Services, which operates out of Melbourne and London, and the author of The Secret Life of Real Estate, How It Moves and Why. And that is out now in Australia, presumably in bookshops, Phil?
Yes, or on the net, yes.
Somewhere there. It's 9 o'clock news time.